Hello, welcome to the Galvanize and Restore podcast. I'm your host, Jessica Concepcion, jumping right into today's episode, part two of educational tutoring to reduce adolescent vulnerabilities with a fantastic organization located all the way in Oakland, California called Children Rising. Just to reintroduce our guest today, it's Margina Wade and Eric Steckel. Margina is a force of nature. She has devoted her life to coming alongside children and youth with love and care, providing them the support they need to succeed in school and in life. As the program director of Path to Math, a program under Children Rising, she ensures children are receiving one-on-one math tutoring so they can rise to their God-given potential. We all know how important math is. Eric Steckel loves tutoring in Path to Math, which he says are the highlights of his week. As communications director for Children Rising, he shares the heartwarming stories of kids and tutors rising above in school. I hope you enjoy part two, and if your heart is moved during this episode, as mine was, please take time to consider how you can make a positive and lasting impact in a child's life. This episode provides golden nuggets on how to do this in a school setting, but you can take these with you anywhere you go. And remember, a generous person will prosper. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. This is a nugget of scripture. Nugget of wisdom from scripture, Proverbs 11:25. I love this scripture. It's so good. All right, let's jump in, and I hope you enjoy today's episode. And how do you build that confidence in a student?
Well, I can say for the longest, we take our time, and so like if the student didn't get 9+4 today, then that's where we start out on Thursday, you know. So we'll stay on 9+4 until he gets it. Then when they get it, we celebrate in the whole class. We don't say, oh, he got 9+4. We're like, hey, he got 50 questions and he did some IXL at home. And, you know, everybody's raising their hand. And then the platform that we use offers certificates and that kind of thing. So they love getting in, showing it off and taking pictures. And we send pictures home randomly to parents and say, hey, Johnny's working really hard in class, or look at Lisa doing this and that and this and that. So that's kind of how we get them going.
I love that. I
got one word, stickers.
Lots and lots of stickers. I probably have 10,000 stickers.
They love stickers. You problem with stickers. And I only say that in a little bit joking manner. It is an effective tool. And we've got a little Path to Math where they get to put a sticker on each time they get a new skill. And when they get to the end of it, it becomes an even bigger celebration. So incentivizing them and then celebrating their wins. And then the one other thing that I would say is as important or more important than any, I would say, is the relationship. Once that relationship is formed and really bonded, suddenly they want to perform for the tutor.
Wow.
They want to learn for the tutor. And that's that flip on its head that I experienced in January. He did not want to be there before. He did not want to work with me. In January, something, you know, flipped in his head, and he wanted to work with me and perform for me.
Wow.
And that's only due to the relationship, really.
Yeah.
And that goes to show how our communication, our support, emotionally, maybe presently, just being engaged with that, with the student, how big of a difference it makes. You know, it's funny, everything you guys are mentioning, how, you know, you're cheering on the students, the stickers, basically like a checklist of what's the progress that they're making. It's so core to our human nature. Those are things that we need, you know, even as adults, I will say. Everybody wants to, you know, everyone wants to be applauded or, you know, supported. It's just a part of, you know, having that community. So it's amazing the work you guys are doing, being able to support children, not just, it's like a very, like the fact that you guys do not grade them, but it's more of like seeing their progress and there's no grading scale. It's very interesting. Was that something that was decided right from the beginning, or was that something that was kind of changed as the program progressed?
Yeah, no, it's always been like that. We've never had a grading system, and our measuring system is only to us, and they see their progress. So, so the platform that we use actually tracks them and what they got wrong, what they get right, and what they need more help with. That's our personal information and the tutor's personal information that they'll get on that student. But the student just gets to see the stars and that their numbers went from 210 to 310, you know, and that kind of thing. And they have a little map that just has stair steps going up, you know. So we're like, and some steps are, you know, like a little itsy bitsy step, like a quarter of an inch, and then some steps are like an inch long on this map. So they're like, wow, you really did a lot of work right here. And then we have a report that comes out every Monday to every tutor that says what their progress of their student was. So we can come back to school and just immediately celebrate them. You know, I saw you were working at home on your online, you know, this is something to celebrate. And so they want to do it again. And now we got some prizes in the cupboard that they're trying to earn. So they're like, okay, did I get one yet? Did I get one yet? And we're like, so they earn these little bucks, you know, that they can buy stuff with later. And so that's all teaching math.
I love that.
I geek out on the analytic in the back, because I mean, in a way they're graded, but it's not a letter grade. Like we can see their progress and know what they need to work on and so on, but it doesn't equate in their minds to like an A, a B, or a C. All they see is their line going up. And I geek out on watching their line go up. And the boy that I talked about earlier, he started at a kindergarten level in math, and he's advanced as of today an entire grade level. Wow. Since October. I've got another 2.5 to 3 months with him. And now that we've really sort of hit the rocket fuel, I really do believe that we'll get a full 2 grade levels of advancement in the course of 1 year. So he's doubled up on what he needed to do. And will, my hope is that he'll be close to grade level by the end of the school year.
That's amazing.
Very close. Maybe next year as a third grader, come back again for a little while, but I do believe that if he keeps working with me, he'll make a lot of progress. And I wanted to go back just briefly to you asked about the consequences, and Margina talked about, she mentioned the, you know, the pathway to prison if they're not getting what they need in school. And you know, putting that another way, if a child is not successful in school, their chances of dropping out in middle school or high school are tenfold or hundredfold. I don't know the number, but it's known that a child is far more likely to drop out if they cannot read by fourth grade,
wow,
by the end of third grade. Same with numeracy facts. If they cannot do that, they are far more likely to drop out. And we know that people who have dropped out of high school didn't succeed in school have a far likelier chance to live in poverty and suffer the ill effects of that type of life, the violence that we see in our lower income neighborhoods. And if we can stop that, if we can stop that pipeline and say, get this child up to grade level so that they can go into fourth with a fighting chance of really prospering in school, people promise this a lot, but I do believe it's true. You can change the trajectory of that child's life. You really can. And that's not an overstatement. Mm-hmm.
No, I love that you mentioned you went back to that, because I was going to go back to it as well. Because that is the reality is prevention works. And, You know, I was at a training one time and we were talking about a different population that we were serving. However, I had a moment where I was speaking to one of the directors of the program, and he mentioned how they, one of the things that you cannot measure is prevention. It's really hard, right, to measure, you know, what's not happening. So, yeah, it's not happening. So, but the amazing thing is that because we have statistics on what happens when someone's not receiving this type of intervention, that's kind of helpful to know that when you see that improvement in that child, you know, like you mentioned, the child you've been working with who he went from knowing kindergarten level to now first grade level, that is change, and that's progress that if you were not there, it might not be there at all, or it might have taken him maybe a couple years, you know, of struggling more.
It would be worse.
Yeah. Do you have anything in regards to the statistics in regards to the pipeline, that the illiteracy rate and the pipeline?
The common quoted statement is that the folks who are planning the prison system look at the second and third grade literacy levels to project forward the number of prison beds they will need. And so it's this insidious thought that they're looking at these second and third grade children and whether they can read or not and saying, okay, well, that's going to help us understand how many beds we need in 20 years. I mean, it really is that, that sort of dot to dot. But on top of all of that, and, you know, we talked about the confidence and the joy they get in learning. Mm-hmm. And what's the opposite of confidence and joy? It's lack of confidence. It's not feeling joy. It's feeling like you don't have opportunity. And what are all the things that can happen to a youth or a young adult when they've gone through year after year of life feeling incapable, no confidence, and no future? Mm-hmm. Those are the kids that get preyed on, whether it be by gangs or other people with ill intent. Those are the people that are preyed upon. Mm-hmm. And that's tragic to think about.
Yeah. And it's easy. I can see how if you are feeling, you know, that lack of confidence, you don't belong in like the educational system, then maybe I'll belong in this gang, you know, like maybe I'll belong somewhere where I can, you know, achieve something, or I can make this run, you know, for a drug dealer, and look, I did it and I'm good at it. Okay, I'm going to do it again. So I could totally see how that confidence could be built in some other way, but in a bad way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what you guys are doing is amazing, and prevention is the key. And I know that you guys already mentioned so much about the volunteers and just non-paid. Volunteer means not paid.
So, not paid.
We need to state that because a lot of people, I think, kind of have it, you know, it's easier to donate to an organization, which is great. All organizations need people to donate. But there is another level to being there for a child, those 2 hours, 1 hour. Could you talk about just like how do you select your volunteers, and like are there certain character traits that you need as a volunteer that work most efficient with this age group?
Yeah. Well, what makes a great tutor is, number one, first of all, they have to have the heart, you know, the heart to want to be in that space or learn about that space, or, you know, open themselves to learning something new, because it will be new to every tutor. It doesn't matter who you are. Some people come and say, oh, I've been tutoring for years and I tutored here and there and here and there. But yes, but once in our training, I'm sure you're going to hear something new. So training and commitment and understanding how to find out where the child is in life, and that they are committed to figure out what helps that child learn. So don't come with cookie cutter ideas like, oh, well, I taught my own child, I can teach this child. I want them to throw all that out the window. And then ensure that our place is safe and non-judgmental, you know, and that it's fun. So, you know, I tell tutors, they don't have to be a teacher. Mm. You'll get more if you're just a friend, you know. So the teaching can come from being a friend. But sometimes they don't view their teachers as a friend, but they can be taught by a friend, right? So all of this is part of the training before they're even assigned to sit down with a student. And I've had a few that, you know, feel like, oh, we're coming to work in, let's say, trenches. Not allowed. If you think somebody's, that's somebody's kingdom. You're not allowed to call somebody's neighborhood trenches or the bottom or anything like that. Then they're coming with their preconceived notion that, you know, they live on high and they're not even given a bootstrap. They're just like going out and throwing candy in the street. That's not what we're doing. So we're here to change a life, you know, to help a kid be inspired. And you can be a role model no matter who you are. You can be a role model. So if you don't have that mindset, you wouldn't make a good tutor. So we just want to make sure that they know the real deal.
Yeah, and it sounds like one, you need humility and flexibility because I'm sure it's like a daily switch that has to happen where it's like, okay, I have to remember, I have to turn off what I think I know and go in here with like an open mind, different way of seeing how to talk to a child in regards to
our urban kids. I had one tutor in training. There was like about 12 or 15 tutors there, and after I gave this spiel about, you know, working with our urban kids, you know, don't pick up your phone and show where you've gone, you know, and then you ask the kid what they do this week and they can't compete stories with you, right? So I was just saying how you have to make sure that it's not about you. And so one tutor said, oh, this is something more than tutoring. I'm not sure I'm ready for this. I said, well, might not be for you. You're absolutely right. Might not be for you.
They're like, oh,
this is more than tutoring. This is more than teaching math. Yeah.
What it really comes down to is exactly right. It's the tutor, the volunteer, you know, taking Christ's command to love and taking that commandment and going into the schools and loving that child for the time that they're with them and uplifting them. And while I say, you know, living Christ's commandment, I said before, we're faith inspired. We're not in preaching to the children. We're not converting souls. That may come later. But anybody of any faith tradition who wants to pour love into these children and see them have a fairer chance to succeed in school and in life can come and join and make it about the child. And they will, in turn, feel that love. There is something in it for the tutor, but they have to understand that that's secondary. It's the child.
Yeah.
It's the child that comes first. And, you know, for those who want to preach, I just remind them, say, you know what? If that young kid is dead before they're 18 because they didn't get this, you know, but you know that soul might have been lost before it had a chance, before the young child had a chance. So we're doing the work to make sure that they can succeed and thrive in life and find their way.
Yeah.
And God will find them then.
Yeah.
God knows where they are. They will find God in it.
Yeah. It, it's foundational, I think. And it's, you know, if you, it's beautiful. I think it's definitely practical too. Being very practical with it, because you have to be able to do some, you know, a part of our life is, you know, prayer, faith, believing, but also faith without works is dead. So it's works. Like, if you don't ever take a step, you know, if you're not taking a step towards that change, then it's not going to just happen. I think T.D. Jakes said it best when he said, you know, you can pray for a chair, but God's going to give you a tree, and you have to make the chair from the tree.
Right.
So there's a lot of practicality there, but it does, you know, like, just, I imagine the humility it takes to, that you need in order to not be upset if a child, you know, is disrespectful towards you. And, you know, you have to, like, have that self confidence that to not make it about you, you know, as a volunteer, I imagine.
Yeah. Yes.
I love that. So I know in our previous conversation that you had mentioned a summer camp for the Richmond community. So I wanted you to just dive into what is the summer camp about? Who do you serve at this camp? And typically, how many children you guys are serving?
Okay, well, this is through a different organization called Today's Youth Matters, where I serve as the dean of the camp for girls. And so it's centrally located in Richmond, but they serve students mainly 8 to 12 years old. They take 80 to 100 girls and the same number of boys, and it allows kids to be kids. They take them to camp, and they have all these wonderful experiences. Everything from, I'll give you a laundry list. Love, respect, motivation, conflict resolution, trauma and tragedies we talk about. We talk about acceptance of one another and people who are different. And sharing, and then we turn around and take them zip lining and swimming and rock climbing and rocket launching. And then we turn around and teach them about self-love and hygiene and personal care and how to fold your clothes, things like that. How to make snacks really safe at home. We teach them how not to use microwaves because they can get things too hot and burn themselves. So we teach them how to make trail mixes and things like that. And then we teach them about how they're wonderfully and purposefully made by God and loved by Him, and how to pray through motivational speakers, singing like really loud movement, fun kind of singing. And it might be about peeling a banana or the shark, but eventually it'll end up being like a little story about a Bible story or something. Then they'll hear, they'll have a little Bible lesson that's relatable to little kids. And we also have what's called real life, where we teach them about things that happen in their life that's not their fault, or they might feel guilty about, or they need to talk to people about, or, you know, how to deal with peer pressure and how to deal with things at school and, you know, how to get help for yourself if nobody's listening, you know. And all of this is like a $1,700 per child camp. Mm. And parents only pay $25 for it.
Amazing.
Yeah, and they stay for 5 days, and it's 5 glorious days.
Yeah, you guys do.
When
they get ready to go home, they sleep all the way home.
It's up along the Russian River in wine country, a beautiful, beautiful part of California just north of us.
Oh, wow.
Alliance Redwood Camp.
That's nice. So you said how much was it for the program, and then?
It's a $1,700 value camp per student.
Wow.
Because that's, it's the ratio of, you don't have like one adult and 8 or 10 kids. You got one adult and 2 to 3 kids.
Oh, wow.
So you have 80 to 100 kids. You know, you have, you know, a third of that in is doubled by the adults there. And we have, we bring high school students so that they learn how to care for younger people as leaders. And then we have senior leaders, and then we have another tier of leaders top of that. So kids are always safe. They're always with somebody. It's just a really safe place for a kid to be a kid. And, you know, some of them, I'm not exaggerating, some of them have not even ridden an escalator before. Wow. So to go on a zip line up in some trees is just like, it. Some of them have this fear. So if you just climb the stairs, you've already succeeded, you know, facing your fear. So we don't force any kids to do anything, but they end up wanting to try everything.
I love that. It's so amazing. And I know you mentioned a little bit that during this time, you guys also talk to them about things that have happened in their life not being their fault. And I just think that that means that there's probably a chance for children to share just what's happening, or what, you know, they might be excited, and then they get into this mode of, you know, contemplation, and they're thinking about things. So like, how important is it for children to have a safe space to share their stories, and how have you seen that happen in the camp?
Yeah, it means everything, because it's something that they don't get every day, is a safe place to speak, and it's something that they don't get to do every day, is talk to an adult, and the adult doesn't want anything back from them. You know, we're just listening, and we're sponges. And if they ask us for advice, then we give it, you know. So we all take training of how to respond to certain things. Some of them come with very, very, very heavy hearts. And from the, and about the third day, they're crying because they're feeling some sort of relief, or they're feeling some sort of acceptance. And they realize that there is life outside of just their home and their school. And there's other people who can care about them that they wouldn't normally know of. But we also teach them how to be aware of dangers around them and of people who aren't safe.
I hope this episode was informative. It helped build a new way of seeing how to tutor students, and what you can do to impact a child's life. The kind of person you are to them matters. How we treat kids makes a difference. How we invite them to share a part of their lives with us makes a difference. And just being a listening ear and being patient, walking in humility, it does make a difference. So this was part two. And next week, we are going to be doing part three, and that will be the final episode. I hope you have enjoyed so far, and get ready because it's not over. Stay tuned for part three. See you next week.